Today is Tuesday, February 10th, and we have four bills to hear. First bill is Senate File 26 under Senator Jungbauer. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if I could get my testifiers to come and join me at the table, then we'll be ready to go. As always, I like to keep things short, sweet, and to the point, and let you guys tell me what you want to know.
Tell us what we want to know, Senator Jungbauer.
Tell you what you want to know. All right. Senate File 26 is a bill dealing with inattentive driving and penalty enhancements. And it's always curious, members, because I authored this bill last year just so that I could get as much input as possible so we could have it all refined. And like many of you have, when you author a bill, the day that you have a hearing is when people finally make comments. So I will start out by saying we were aware of some of the issues with this bill, and we will have some changes. I believe any of the changes we have would actually deal with Judiciary Committee. So I'll go through this, and we'll talk about it. I have a couple testifiers that will give you some personal experience. But I want to kind of set up the background of Senate File 26. Around the courts in Minnesota, there's a big gap in between careless driving and actually using due care in driving. And the due care comes under the speeding statute. So what we're seeing from court to court in Minnesota is that some courts will allow this use of due care when you're driving to come in, and other courts will kick it out if it isn't directly related to speeding. So what I'm trying to do with Senate File 26 is clarify in statute and come up with something in the statute that directly deals with inattentive driving and the results from that inattentive driving. Now, most of us are pretty aware that inattentive driving is becoming quite costly in terms of property damage and lives around the United States. There's a lot of states that have legislation on inattentive driving. But I didn't want to actually define inattentive driving, and the reason is this. As you look around this room or you look around this table, there's a lot of us that can eat a hamburger when we're driving. There's a few of us that can talk on our cell phones when we're driving. And there might even be some folks that can put on their makeup, comb their hair, shave. I think I've seen just about everything out on the road, reading the morning newspaper and reading your latest book that came out. But in a lot of cases, this just causes problems, and it shouldn't be done in the cars. And I think most of us under common sense know we shouldn't be doing this in our car, and yet if you look around during rush hour every day, this goes on. So it's interesting here that New Hampshire, the only state that doesn't require adult motorists to wear seat belts, but it tickets drivers for eating, drinking, talking on the cell phone, or fussing with their makeup while behind the wheel. So across the country, there's many states that have legislation to deal with inattentive driving. Distracted driving, it's 38 states have different things on things like watching television. 11 states in the District of Columbia restrict cell phones while driving. 19 other states actually track the mobile phone involvement. We've talked about that, but I didn't want to get into that, members, in as much as naming what the inattentive driving was. I wanted to deal with creating a forum in the statute that was in between careless driving. And again, careless driving has a high level that law enforcement needs to come up with in order to actually charge somebody with careless driving. And then that due care under speeding is a whole nother section, and we're trying to fill in the gap so that people that cause property damage or bodily injury, actually there is a legitimate section in the statutes to be charged under. So under Section 1, we're actually establishing the violation of inattentive driving. We do also know that the effective date is way too quick. Motor vehicle will tell you that. We actually, again, I introduced this last year. We didn't have a hearing, so we intend to change the dates because it would take a while in order to set this up and actually get everything out there in terms of education and in terms of statutes and getting courts up to speed, law enforcement up to speed. So that will change. Section 2 allows the enhancement penalty for the violations, and we're talking about bodily harm or property damage, and we actually name different amounts in terms of that, and fines. In Section 3, we actually allow the enhancement to go up to a felony, and in doing a lot of research, members, I've figured out that a felony will not fly, I don't believe, under this particular statute in this section. So we anticipate putting that down to gross misdemeanor. So I've tried to do my research on here and make sure that it matches other laws and matches what we've found out in terms of courts. Section 4 requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to include a section in the driver's manual and talk about inattentive driving, driving practices, and the enhanced penalties. And members, we've talked about this. We've done legislation in terms of, text messaging, other issues. So we know that some of the problem comes from our youngest drivers and their some of the habits that they've created with new technology. So we need to teach them in their classes. Section 5 requires peace officer standards and training to send out a summary, and so that we have all those up to speed. So again, members, we're trying to create a new section in between the reckless driving and the speed. And that's with that, I will actually bring a couple of my testifiers, then we'll let you tell us what you want to know more about Senate File 26. My first testifier is Dorian Grilly.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Grilly.
My name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the executive director of a new nonprofit called the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. The Bicycle Alliance is dedicated to making Minnesota's roads, streets, and communities more bicycle-friendly. We believe that bicycling is good for individual and community health and the environment. We're a tax-exempt nonprofit, and our main charitable purpose is to educate bicyclists of all ages on how to safely bicycle on Minnesota's streets and highways. And as I'll say in a few minutes, half of the crashes are attributed to bicyclist actions, not motorist actions. But I'm here today to support efforts to strengthen Minnesota's laws and education efforts regarding inattentive driving. This is a big concern for bicyclists. In fact, safety concerns are the biggest deterrent for potential bicyclists. Each year, there are about 1,000 bicycle crashes in Minnesota. Almost every one of those results in some form of injury, and about 10 result in the death of the bicyclist. The number of pedestrian crashes and injuries are similar, but the death rate is much higher, ranging from 33 to 56 deaths in the last 10 years, per year in the last 10 years. The fault for crashes in Minnesota in 2007 was attributed to the bicyclist slightly less than half the time and the motorist slightly more than half the time. And inattentive driving on the part of the motorist was listed as the key contributing factor in 27% of the crashes. So a very significant number here is attributed to inattentive driving, even though there's no definition of it, I guess. Opportunity for distraction while driving a motor vehicle has increased significantly, as we all know, in the past decade. Strengthening the laws and penalties and efforts to educate motor vehicle drivers about the causes and potential dangers of inattentive driving is the right thing to do, and the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota will do its best to help with this and other bicyclist and motorist education efforts.
Thank you,
Mr. Grilly.
My second testifier is Barbara Banks.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Barbara Banks. I am here today to help you understand and to see how a particular Minnesota laws are failing our citizens at providing justice for all. And I say that because I would like to share a story with you that starts way back on May 9th of 2007. At about 7 p.m. that night, my husband left home to run a quick errand. He was just going to run into town and be right back. The last words he said when he walked out the door was, "I'm ready to go. I'll see you in just a little bit." And he never came back. He never came back because a driver made a left-hand turn into Dan's pathway on a 55-mile-an-hour roadway. Dan's skid mark is less than 50 feet long. He had less than 4 seconds to react. All of the legal aspect of what transpired after that. Took over 17 months before we heard what the consequences would be for that driver. His consequences amounted to a $300 fine, only because he had a speeding ticket previously on his record. 30 days of house arrest, and because he was self-employed and lived in his home, he was free to leave the home for any reason that he was called to work. He had to wear one of those bracelets and was on house arrest for those 30 days. It was suggested that he also do some community service, and we had asked that it be in a motorcycle safety environment because Dan was on a motorcycle. And we've yet to hear whether or not his license, he has a commercial driver's license because he was driving a tow truck at the time. And that compounded the crash. And we've yet to hear if he's even lost his or his license had been suspended or that any of the community service has even been enacted. That court date was back in October. And we're still waiting. People who drive and kill someone need to be made accountable. They're not with the state laws the way they are. I've had judges, prosecutors, deputies, police officers tell me it's the way the law is written. We can't do anything else. The judge, everyone, wanted charges reduced and thrown out because they knew they couldn't prove it. It's horrifying to realize that a human life amounts to a fine. People need to be made accountable. The law has to change. I want to know how many people have to die like this before the law changes. You have no idea what it's like when a medical examiner knocks on your door. And I hope you never do. Please take this seriously. Please make these people accountable. The current law doesn't even allow for a second or third offense to compound their fines. The law has to change. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Ms. Banks. Senator Gunbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Were there any questions for my testifiers? It's two that I brought in. We have Tom and Mac from Abate here as well. They are in full support of the bill. And
any
I don't
questions
know who's here to
committee?
Testify in favor or against otherwise, but.
Questions from the committee? Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Jungbauer, in Subdivision 2 of Section 1 of the bill, there's a instructions to include Subdivision 1 in the driver's education curriculum. Currently, are we currently doing that, and so we're just adding this information to that section, or are we creating a whole new curriculum?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Moi. I believe when we did the law on text messaging that we put a section in the curriculum on that, and this would just be a furtherance of that, if I recall that last section of state statute.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, I wonder if you've heard from professional associations or people who maybe even, you know, the taxi cab industry, because in some of the professions now, a lot of them have GPS systems built into their vehicles that they use as a matter of what they do. Has there been any concerns expressed from those industries that this might capture them in the law?
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Moi. As I said earlier, I put this bill out there last year in hopes of getting a number of responses. We have not had any response from industry. We've gotten numerous responses from different lawyers with opinions on different things, and the latest from James Backstrom, Dakota County Attorney, that's has some ideas with the Minnesota County Attorneys Association and some of the things that they've backed. So they had some ideas for clarifying this and some ideas as well that didn't really fit into our whole intent here of creating a new section in between careless. They thought things should be under the careless driving, and I believe that threshold to be much higher than what we would need under inattentive driving. And then Ms. McCormick, of course, came and told us the potential fiscal implications of instituting this law, and they are working on a fiscal note, depending on dates and how things go. So they'll have some, they will have some things ready for us by the time this hits judiciary.
Senator Saltzman.
I just want to go back for just a second, Mr. Chair, to ask, when you explained this bill in the beginning, Senator Jungbauer, you talked about that some people can talk on a phone, some people can eat while they're driving. I'm a little unclear, and I certainly understand the issue, is inattentive driving just seems very broad and vague. And how will you be able to prove that it was inattentive driving versus something else? It almost is like any time you're in an accident, someone wasn't paying attention unless it was a medical emergency or something. So I'm just thinking about the fact that there seems to be resistance if we name specific behaviors. Am I missing something here? Or I just wanted to clarify what kind of behaviors this specifically addresses.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, you're not missing anything. At least legislators in Minnesota are a little bit hesitant to name specific activities, but it's fairly easy, especially in terms of bodily injury and the capabilities we have in terms of reconstructing accidents today, in order to determine exactly what happened. And I had a friend that was in a extremely bad accident last year, flown in, and an officer as well flown in, and it was interesting. Won't get into the details of it, but I will just say the outcome of the accident investigation, there were three witnesses on the scene that all claimed that a certain party in the accident had been speeding and running the red light. And when they got done with the reconstruction, they actually determined it was the opposite person that actually was speeding and ran a red light. So our reconstruction techniques and what we have in terms of abilities today are phenomenal in order to determine the exact cause of the accident. Secondarily, I think law enforcement needs to have that latitude, but the whole idea of the bill is there's a huge gap in statute today. And when you get into statute, it starts out with the careless driving. And I'm not sure the exact section of statute, but then it moves on to speeding, and careless driving has its own definition, and speeding has this using due care written into it. And some of the courts are saying that if you implement this due care clause, it has to be only under the speeding. So there is nothing that comes in between careless driving and the due care when you're speeding. So we're trying to create within the statute a new section that clarifies the inattentive driving. I'm open to suggestions on other ways that legislators would think it should be defined, but my main idea is to get something in statute that allows law enforcement to have some tools to deal with this, and actually that people would have a penalty for doing things they shouldn't be doing behind the wheel, no matter what they are.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question is, you tell me whether or not I can get picked up for this, okay? So I pull into McDonald's and I have my sausage biscuit with egg that I have every morning and a cup of coffee. That's number one. Number two, what if I'm driving down the road and I light my cigar and smoke that? Number three, what if my cell phone rings and I pick it up and answer it? Well, I guess the question is, them are three things, as you well know, I'm not very politically correct, but those are three things that I do occasionally in my car. I probably could list out a lot of other things, but let's just stick with those three. And so does that mean then that that some officer could see me and see that I'm driving and I have that cup of coffee in my one hand and I'm not attentive?
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, this section deals specifically with an effect of distracted driving. So you would have to cause property damage or injury to somebody before this section of statute would be utilized. So if you can drive down the road and you can smoke your cigar while munching on your McDonald's and answering your cell phone, we're not trying to get at you. Because we all do some interesting things, and I guess just from personal experience around, a lot of people know that I run and ride bicycle around here, and I'll just give you my experience just from yesterday. My 51st birthday, and I'm out running, so I like to run on Summit Avenue. And I'm in the last mile thinking, God, this is great. I had a great birthday run. And I'm in the edge of the road, actually in where the cars park, on the edge of the bike lane. And the next thing I see is a huge van coming straight at me, not in their lane, and all I can see is the bottom side of a Caribou coffee cup. Now, the reason I could tell it was a Caribou is because this woman was that close to me that I could read the side of the cup as well. And as she was swerving, then she finally put her coffee cup down and got out of there because there was really not much place left for me to go. So she wouldn't have gotten tagged at that point for inattentive driving, only if there was an effect. Had she placed me up on the curb somewhere with the front end of her van, then this anticipates a penalty for that sort of thing.
Well,
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, so the answer is pretty vague. You know, if every day at about, let's see, about 4 to 4:30, if you happen to leave the Capitol to get on 35E, and if you're like me, you look at 35E, and then you have these crazy little ramps that we have 40 good Minnesotans are all sitting there all afternoon, even though the highway is free, but some guy is sitting in some control center, and he thinks everybody is going down the road at 42 miles an hour like synchronized swimming. I avoid them, and I look at it, and I go, whoa, okay, I'm not going to go there. So then I go down to the next block, about a block before the XL Center, and I turn right. I will tell you there are two bikers that are there every day that never stop for their stop signs. And that always bugs me a little. I'm just throwing that out for the bicycle riders that hopefully they learn that they stop, but especially now when the weather is nice, in the spring and in the fall, because it's a little chilly out, there's a tendency not to stop at lights. But it just seems like maybe you're really infringing on my rights here, that Senator Jungbauer, that, you know, as you well know, I don't like that type laws too well. And doesn't it seem like the police there? I mean, so if there's an accident, then somebody can go back and say, you had this accident because you were on the cell phone, and then you can. Then there would be more whatever.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, certainly I don't want to infringe on your rights. And actually, I believe in the Constitution that's one of the things that's mentioned is public safety, and especially when it comes to our transportation system. So I believe that is part of what the government is responsible for, unlike maybe 60% of our Minnesota budget and a good deal of our federal budget. In point of fact, even on the cell phone use, we would have to, under current laws, as I understand them, we would have to subpoena the cell phone record in order to prove the person was on a cell phone. So there's a good deal of due diligence and other court remedies that we'd have to go through in order to actually prove something in terms of inattentive driving on different things. Again, I'm open to suggestion, but quite honestly, today you can get any kind of distracted, inattentive driving or failure to exercise due care thrown out if it wasn't under the auspices of speeding or careless driving. And so I'm trying to merely put something in statute that clarifies things that people are getting tickets for today. And from your perspective, the citizen would actually have a better grounds to fight those sorts of things if this was in statute.
We have Dahl, Murphy, and Moi. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of wanted to go off of what Senator Day was talking about a little bit and just give a couple examples so I can understand where we would go with this here. First of all, Ms. Banks, I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
No one wants to lose a loved one. In that particular accident, would under this particular, if this were to be enacted or had been enacted in law, as you have it written here, would what would have been his violation, the driver's violation? Would it have been a charge with a gross misdemeanor or a felony? What was the to determine the reason why?
Certainly, it would be the gross misdemeanor. Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm not used to this protocol. Yeah. Certainly, there would be the gross misdemeanor, probably, you know, primary. But they do add additional charges as they see fit. In the case of Dan's death, the driver had turned in such a conspicuous manner that it appeared he tried to beat Dan across the intersection. Although he had his turn signal on and the eyewitness seen him slowing for the turn, he clearly was not paying any attention. So the conclusion at the in the reconstruction accident report that the trooper prepared left no doubt or speculation that it was due to inattentive driving, and he specifically said that in his report.
Okay.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, thank you. As I would argue, I guess that pretty much every accident is at least one party, it's due to inattentive driving. I mean, if we were paying attention all the time. But bring a couple other examples in. One is similar to your situation, and Senator Jungbauer, maybe you could address this, is that in Dakota County last year or the year before, there was an incident where a police officer was driving down a road where he was in the right lane, two lanes. Apparently there was a call for him to respond to something and made a U-turn right into the path of an oncoming motorcyclist who was falling behind him, and that motorcyclist was killed. And would this apply to that, in that circumstance, to the police officer?
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, it could, and that's why some of it's intentionally vague today, and we're hoping to get more input on how to tighten it up. But again, most of what we have in terms of statutes is very vague and in how law enforcement has a wide area in utilizing those statutes. And conversely, a bicycle, a snowmobilist, somebody else that's inattentive driving and causes damage to somebody else's property or physical damage could be charged under this same section.
And Mr. Chair, just one follow-up on that point.
Senator Dahl.
And if a bicyclist or someone comes through an intersection, maybe not stopping, just kind of going through the intersection, and you're in your vehicle and you make a left-hand turn and run into that bicyclist and they're killed, but they clearly violated a traffic signal there as well. Maybe you could be determined you were looking in the wrong direction as well, but who gets the penalty there? And is there some responsibility for that other rider as well for also violating the traffic signals?
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, the bicyclist could definitely end up getting the penalty depending on reconstruction and what the records were showing. There is some rules in California under which bicyclists have been charged, and conversely, there has been no rules in California that tend to protect the bicyclist, so it's kind of an interesting.
But Mr. Chair, in this event, if the bicyclist were killed and really couldn't be charged with anything, does that mean that the other driver of the vehicle is still going to be charged with a felony or a gross misdemeanor and sent to prison possibly because of that? I mean, if that person hadn't driven through the stop sign, there wouldn't have been an accident either. So I'm just trying to kind of get if there's two parties that you can go after, I mean, are we just looking for to penalize somebody because an accident happened, or are we, you know, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. Do we need to really beef this up to a felony because someone was injured or killed?
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, in the beginning, when I introduced, kind of went over the whole bill, we anticipate that I know we're going to end up taking the felony issue out. It, under some other sections of law, it would create I think it's 645. The way things are interpreted, you'd have to go down to a lower penalty, so we would drop the penalty down to a maximum of a gross misdemeanor.
Okay.
So we don't anticipate that you could utilize a felony under this sort of a statute without redoing major parts of other issues in the law. And we're not looking to try to charge people, again, willy-nilly, but you need things in statute as people's habits change in life, and inattentive driving has become very prevalent. You need to always be looking at your laws, and are some of the things in the statutes outdated? Should some things be brought up to speed? We could even argue definitionally. Who understands today? Does a kid understand what it means to exercise due care in operating a motor vehicle? Probably not, but they certainly understand what inattentive driving is. So if nothing else, we should be jockeying some definitions around that are the vernacular of the day, and we should be teaching everybody that drives about those types of issues.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and Senator Jungbauer, along those lines, you know, and Senator Dahl and Senator Day make good points about, you know, where does the responsibility of the state end and that personal responsibility takes up. And we've had the same argument over the seatbelt bill. I feel the same way you do about this bill as I feel about the seatbelt bill. Chapter 160 and several other chapters of law deal explicitly with traffic regulations. You know, it's the most regulated activity that we do on a daily basis is our privilege to drive. And just because in the Constitution it says that education and transportation have to be provided for doesn't mean that we don't have any say what happens on our roads. We have a lot of statutory language in regards to traffic safety, and I think this would enhance that. You know, I would be interested to hear from law enforcement on their spin on how effective of a tool this is, but I believe that it would be a very effective tool. I don't see, and this is in regard to something that Senator Day said, but I don't see law enforcement pulling somebody over for, you know, having a cup of coffee and a heater and talking on the cell phone at the same time, although maybe they ought to. You know, in those cases where there's a clear, you know, where it's clearly known that the person was not paying attention and they, you know, in my opinion, that's reckless behavior. And they cause a death or some sort of substantial bodily harm or tear up somebody's, you know, drive through their house. I mean, we had one of those down in our neck of the woods not too long ago. You know, the front room became a garage. And it was because some kid was out joyriding around and changing CDs and boom, he ended up in a guy's front room. You know, in cases like that where it's clear, I think that having, you know, a gross misdemeanor or even a felony in those cases where, you know, someone lost their life is an appropriate response by the state. Because driving is a privilege in our state. And, you know, I understand about personal responsibility all too well. And unfortunately, that's not a 100% thing in society. Some folks choose not to be very responsible on their own. But Senator Jungbauer, I believe you're on the right track, and you know maybe a couple things need to be worked out with some of the other committee members. But I think it's high time that we pass this, and you know, especially for the safety of a lot of people like bicyclists and motorcyclists. You know, all too often the people in the motorcycle community come to us and they want a law like this on the books because, you know, too often it happens that people aren't paying attention and they don't start seeing motorcycles, you know, like the little bumper sticker says. So I think you're on the right track. And Senator Day, I'm sorry that you got to sit at those traffic meters for so long, but you should trade your license plate in because those people over at traffic management know which car is yours, so.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I appreciate the encouraging words, and I think part of that is a key. You know, people need to be responsible, and driving is a privilege, but right now there's a big gap in terms of penalty if you're driving inattentively and you cause bodily injury or property damage, and especially if you consistently don't learn. So penalty is about a way of teaching people things, that they know there's a consequence for the way they're doing business, for the way they're driving, and to increase that if you don't learn the first time. In every other phase of our law, there's an increased penalty for doing the same habits over and over, and I believe we need something in our driving statutes that correlates the same way.
Senator Mott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Jungbauer, as I'm listening to the conversation, I'm getting the message that your intent here is for this law to be applicable to all roadways. Is that correct?
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, I would imagine it to be applicable in all roadways. I can't think of anything under the statutes that we exempt laws.
So Mr. Chair and Ms. Berzlowski, the fact that it says specifically highway here, is that limiting it to just highway?
Ms. Berzlowski will clear that up.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, it might improve it to say street or highway because that is the defined term in Chapter 169, although the 169.14, which is the speed law, refers to highway, just highway. So that's, I think, at least in that case, it's understood to mean all streets and highways. But street or highway would probably be an improvement just to tie in with the statutory definition.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess it's up to Senator Jungbauer, but I would think he would want to clarify that. And then on a follow-up question, Senator Jungbauer, I see here that there are sort of three elements in the violation section. You talk about operating and halting inattentively, and then you also talk about imprudently in light of circumstances then existing, and then you say, or without exercising reasonable care. And I'm assuming that the rights of others or the safety of persons or property is that with exercising reasonable care, or are you intending the other elements to also modify against the rights of others or the safety of persons or property? And might I say that it's a little bit confusing, and maybe you intend for all three to be flexible and broad, for all three to be applicable, but I would think that it's a little bit confusing as to which of those standards, and maybe those standards might even conflict.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Moi, I think I'll ask for a little bit of help here, although when we sit down and look at the intent, we borrowed some of it from the speed section, which talked about the due care, so we didn't want to write a new definition that would negate what was already existing under the speed, but perhaps Ms. Berzovsky can help me on how we were, what we were thinking. Since I did it last year, I forget some of the reasoning that we were putting in terms of our definition.
Senator Jungbauer, I have a question also that's been bothering me here. Every time you've talked about the incident of application, it's when there's an injury or death, but yet it doesn't say that it has to, that this nature of inattention has to result in an injury or death. So is this something that could be a moving violation, like Senator Day was mentioning, where I'm not paying attention, for instance, driving slowly in the left lane or chatting with someone and straddling a lane marker, anything like that. So is it a, can it be a moving violation, and is it primary?
Mr. Chair, it is meant to be a moving violation, not a primary violation. And I guess I look to, although it doesn't go across the whole statute as is written, but the intent is clearly noted in lines 2.1, 2.2, when we talk about a violation of this chapter that causes substantial bodily harm to a person other than the driver or property or damage of property. That was the what we were looking for across the whole statute is not just to allow it as a primary means of stopping somebody, but that would actually have to be an incident related to property damage or bodily injury.
Senator Jungbauer, I was assuming that that section was related to the enhanced crime. So even for the original violation that's described in Section 1, Subdivision 1, it doesn't mention any injury. Maybe that could be something that we looked into, along with the highway. Senator Stephen.
Thank you.
Well, first, Mr. Chair, I don't know if Senator Moore ever had her question answered, but then I have a question.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, I'm just a little bit concerned that there are confusing instructions in the bill, and it might make it difficult for law enforcement to enforce if we're looking at inattentive, imprudence, and then without exercising reasonable care. And then down in Section 2, we're also introducing driving in a negligent manner. So now we've got multiple standards to look at, and I'm wondering, I understand this bill is on its way to the Judiciary Committee, and those will definitely be the issues that we'll be looking at. But I also didn't think that members of this committee would necessarily want it to go out of here without a resolution to that.
You know, Ms. Berezovsky is asked to make a comment on some of those details.
Mr. Chair and Senator Mouat, first of all, on Sections 2 and 3 are not necessarily related to the inattentive driving section.
Okay.
Those are enhancements to any violation of Chapter 169 that is negligent or gross negligent or whatever the standard is that's specified in those sections. So those really are different. They have a different goal in mind, and they apply all the way across 169. As to the subdivision, the Section 1, Subdivision 1 wording, my understanding is that it's intended to be broad. Yes, it's of its nature, it is not a precise violation like eating a sandwich or combing your hair, but it describes three different types of behavior. One is inattention. One is ties in the circumstances, so behavior that might be acceptable under other circumstances is not acceptable because of the circumstances then existing. And the third one is without reasonable regard for rights of others. And those are, I believe, intended to be slightly and somewhat different, but to encapsulate a range of behaviors that are violations.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, so, without exercising reasonable care for the rights of others or the safety of persons or property, would, I think, capture the circumstances that the two witnesses talked about and what Senator Jungbauer's intent is. But I have to tell you that I do have some concerns about the inattentive and the imprudent in the light of circumstances then existing, because I think imprudently in the light of circumstances then existing speaks exactly to what Senator Day is talking about. It does create a confusion on whether or not this law will be applied after an incident has taken place, or it could be applied as a primary offense. And so I invite members to discuss that, or I would have Senator Jungbauer think about that, because it is a little bit if that's your intent, then you might have problems with the section that's a little bit more vague.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moore, you make some good points. We were trying to borrow existing language out of some other different sections of the statute in order to not reinvent the wheel, if you will. But as well, yes, the enhancement or stepped approach also was trying to borrow it across the spectrum in order, again, for people that have repeated offenses and get the same penalty, so that we could say that we're not trying to promote people to do over and over the same offense. So I wouldn't mind, if it's the will of the committee, to clarify some of these things, table it for now and clarify it and bring it back for further discussion, so that we make sure we've if it's other issues beyond the what would judiciary would be dealing with.
Well, Senator Stephen.
Well, Mr. Chair, did you want to have it tabled now, and do you want to keep discussing it?
Right.
I think Senator Youngmaier said that he could table it and try to clarify some of these. But one before that, I guess what I was going to ask is if either Senator Youngmaier or counsel could explain the definition between careless driving and inattentive driving, because I still don't understand that distinction, and why not just enhance the penalties for careless driving to get at certain situations that we're discussing.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, that was one of the issues we looked at the closest. There is a much higher threshold under careless driving, and we were trying to create a threshold that was lower because you wouldn't have to be operating a vehicle in a careless or reckless manner in order to cause substantial bodily injury or property damage. And that's part of the issue in the way courts in Minnesota are enforcing things and saying that one court will say, yes, you can enforce inattentive under due care under speeding if there's a speed involved with the process. When other courts have said, we followed some of the court history, have said if the speed isn't involved, then there is no due care applied and you must go straight to careless, which is a whole other threshold in terms of the way it's proven and enforced. So we are trying to create something that is in between, that it could catch a lesser infraction. And, of course, if that lesser infraction got repeated, we want to make sure there's a stepped approach to penalties.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to do an amendment to see if we can try to move the bill out of the committee, given that we've given a lot of time to it already.
I'm open to that. I guess Senator Jungbauer did mention tabling it and bringing it back. If there's many, you know, I think you wanted to change the removing the felony, and we have a highway definition issue. Senator Jungbauer.
We anticipated coming in here that the changes would all concern Judiciary Committee, and if there's a possibility of fine-tuning it in here so that the rest of the changes that we knew and we were getting input on just pertain to judicial, I'm very open to that. I like having a healthy discussion in order that we can get as many things out on the table so we know exactly where we're headed with the bill. So if Senator Moy has an idea that she thinks would satisfy us to get it to Judiciary Committee, I would love to entertain that idea or amendment.
Senator Moy.
Mr. Chair, I usually don't, I'm not comfortable with bills leaving committees contingent on it being fixed in another committee, even though it may be within that committee's jurisdiction. I'm the one, and Senator Ortman and those of us who are on the Judiciary Committee are going to have a chance at this, but the rest of you, this is kind of the last time you get to look at the bill. So,
well, Mr. Chairman.
Unless we would table. Yeah. Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Moy, we've let things go to your committee in the past that dealt with, some sort of enhancement of a penalty. And I can tell you that I've got every confidence that your committee will do what's right with those provisions of this bill. We don't have much jurisdiction over the things that you do. The one change that I thought that we ought to make is what Ms. Berezovsky talked about earlier, is that streets and highways issue. Other than that, and we all know Senator Jungbauer is a man of his word, and if he says he's going to have the felony taken out of there in your committee, I believe him. And there's only two lawyers on this committee, and outside of Ms. Berezovsky, some of that work I'd rather your committee do.
So, Senator Jungbauer is here. Let me propose this amendment, and maybe we can get the bill out of here. And Ms. Berezovsky can help us, but right before highway on line 1.14, maybe insert streetways or whatever the appropriate word is to make sure that we're looking at streets or highways. And then, and the same line, 1.14 after highway, I would like to delete, starting with inattentive, all the way down to existing and the comma, and the or. So inattentive all the way down to or. And then keeping the rest of the sentence so that we're narrowly restricting this to perhaps a circumstance when an incident has already taken place. And we can look at whether or not the inattentive, the lack of exercising reasonable care led to the violation that has occurred.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, I would agree with that. And that was my intention from the beginning, to not make it a primary reason to stop someone and yet to be able to use it after the existing circumstance happened.
And, Mr. Chair, the same changes would have to be made on in Section 4 at line 2.18, I think.
I think what we can do is get Ms. Berezovsky to read back the individual changes, and we'll also have to change line 1.11, where it talks about the.
Well, you can always change that pad note.
Inattentive.
Mr. Chairman, on that line, just strike inattentive driving and
yes.
The semicolon.
Okay, maybe Ms. Berezovsky could read back the changes that we've agreed to here.
Mr. Chair, the amendment, I believe, would be on 1.11, delete inattentive driving, semicolon. On 1.14, before highway, insert street or, and delete inattentively, imprudently, in light of circumstances then existing or. And at 2.20, delete inattentive driving, semicolon. 2.22, delete inattentive driving. And 2.23, delete and drive prudently in light of circumstances.
Mr. Chair, I move that amendment.
Senator Jungbauer, I think you said you were going to deal with the enhancement, the felony enhancement, separately. So
that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Will not include.
We
that.
Anticipate having an amendment that deals with the any of the judicial or judiciary committee issues ready when it comes to the judiciary committee.
Senator Moi, are you comfortable with that?
I'm fine with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Moi, I'm not sure what we do if we take out that phrase inattentive driving and only leave reasonable care. Without trying to be disparaging, I think we invite abuse of that definition of saying reasonable care was not being used. Maybe inattentive driving is just as vague, but I think reasonable care, you could almost get stopped for anything. I mean, would Senator Day get arrested? I'm sorry. Anybody get arrested? That's not fair to do that. Would anybody get arrested who was eating a sandwich and then, let's say they didn't hurt anybody, but they swerved out of the lane, and would that be that they were not exercising reasonable care? I mean, I think it's inattentive driving, but I'm not sure it's quote, reasonable care, because I'm not sure what that means.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, that's why I raised these three standards as being problematic. And the attempt here was trying to help Senator Jungbauer, because inattentively would definitely implicate somebody who's kind of swerves. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tie it to specific action. And so the most responsive way to help Senator Jungbauer was to look at the without reasonable care, tying it to the rights of others or the safety of persons or property, implying that something has happened to the rights of others or persons or properties. So it's the way I would interpret this is that some damage has been done. And in looking at that, then we come back to this particular statute to say, you've damaged the property, but are we going to enhance you because you have violated the statute also?
Okay. All right. I understand now. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, and to answer Senator Rest a little bit more, technically, if you swerve today and you cross a line, you can get ticketed as well for that. And again, the main intent of this legislation is to pick up an area in the statute that isn't covered in between reckless driving and basically exercising reasonable care that exists under the speeding statute and doesn't exist as an open definition for any other moving violation.
Okay. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, the problem is inattentively, what is that? Does that mean that I am having my sandwich and I happen to be in an accident? I would ask everybody here, is drinking coffee or talking on your cell phone, maybe we should have a bill on talking on your cell phone. But we're beating around the bush here. I mean, there's a million things you could probably do in your car, and I could ask everybody here, how do you look at it? Everybody will look at it different. I don't know. Some people would say if you're drinking coffee or definitely talking in your cell phone, you're not paying attention, or if you're reaching down to do whatever you're doing. I mean, I can't imagine how this opens up everything that happens. And I will tell you that I'm totally for, as I've talked to motorcycle riders, I think people should know that motorcycle riders are out there. I think people need to really watch themselves when they're out driving. I understand all of that, but this is so vague that what happens if you are involved in something, and who decides that? Does the jury is, I guess, here, and you'd have to decide whether or not my McDonald's and setting my sandwich down and then picking it up, is that inattentive? Everybody would probably have a different opinion. Some people would say you should never do that. You should have two hands on the wheel, whatever, whatever. So then it's a violation. If they do it, then probably they would look at it,
Senator Day, I think Senator Moy has an explanation for you.
Okay.
Senator Day, you weren't here, but I just moved an amendment to take that out.
Take that out. I know that. Okay.
Senator Orton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Senator Moy's effort here because inattentive is not a legal standard. Reasonable care is a legal standard, and that gets to Senator Day's point. It's a legal standard, but it doesn't do anything to help explain what we're trying to accomplish here. If you operate your vehicle in a way that violates traffic safety laws, you can be arrested for that or stopped for that. So I'm not sure we accomplish anything by putting in a new section in the law, creating a penalty for not using that vehicle in a reasonable way. I'm not sure that we've accomplished anything. And Senator Day is right that it's pretty vague. Now we've left it to law enforcement to say what is a reasonable use of a vehicle or a reasonable way to eat a sandwich. And so I agree with both of them. I think there are still some problems in this bill, and it probably deserves some more work on the part of the author. I'm also concerned very much about the felony standard in this bill, and I do think that this committee is the right place.
Senator Ortman, the felony standard Senator Jungbauer is planning to remove.
Mr. Chair, I understand that, but planning to remove it in Judiciary Committee, and I'm trying to say that I think that this is the right place in the Policy Committee on Transportation to determine whether we should have a felony standard for a violation of this law. And so I would move to table this bill at this time, Mr. Chair.
There's no discussion.
Mr.
No discussion of that.
That's
motion.
A higher motion.
No discussion. Senator Ortman has moved to table the bill with a non-debatable motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign?
No.
No. No.
Division.
It's a division.
You have to have a ruling first before you ask for the
I'm
division.
Sure. Well,
no, that's right.
Yeah. I'm saying the ayes have it. Do we have a division motion for division?
Division.
Division. All those in favor, raise their hand. All those opposed, same sign. To re-poll here. All those in favor, raise their hand. All those opposed, same sign. An 8-8 and the motion fails. So it is not tabled. Any other discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Moi had a motion
on
to
my
amend.
On Senator Moi's motion to amend, and does everyone understand the motion
yes.
and the amendments?
Yes.
Yes.
All those in favor of the Moi motion to amend? Say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 26, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Senator Murphy moves that SF 26 be, as amended, be recommended to pass and pass to the Judiciary Committee. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, is it a higher motion to move to amend? Because I was hoping we would address the felony question here in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd withdraw my motion.
Senator Murphy withdraws his motion. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Murphy. I'd like to offer an amendment to delete Section 3 from this bill. Section 2 would be broad enough to include as a gross misdemeanor the penalty for any substantial bodily harm or death. And so I think that that's sufficient for our purposes at this point. I think the felony is beyond what we need to do under the circumstances. And so I would move to delete Section 3.
I would have to put this up, but I mean, this one cites death. So let me look this up.
Ms. Berezovsky is going to have to take a closer look at it because there's some different sections cited in there, and also death is cited in subdivision 1.
Mr. Chair, I think that death is included in substantial bodily harm.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, up there on line 2.1, under section 2, that would still be part of the bill, where it says substantial bodily harm, could you put or death? Can you incorporate that in your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and if Ms. Berezovsky would do that, appreciate that.
Ms. Berezovsky has a comment.
Mr. Chair, 60902 subdivision 7A, as cited on 2.1 and 2.2, is substantial bodily harm. That means bodily injury, which involves a temporary but substantial disfigurement or a temporary but substantial loss or impairment of function of a bodily member or organ or fracture. Then there's great bodily harm, which is referenced in 2.12, 60902 sub 8, which is bodily injury which creates a high probability of death or causes serious permanent disfigurement, protracted loss or impairment of function of a bodily member or organ or other serious bodily harm, and death. So I think you might want to refer to all three in the gross misdemeanor section to preserve those injuries as well.
Mr. Chair, to make it very clear, I would move to add that language as well.
Senator Ortman moves to...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As long as we are dealing with this tonight, I agree this is what we intended to do in judiciary. But I'd also like to deal with some of these implementation dates. As we drafted this last year, these implementation dates, as long as we're doing an amendment, are way too quick should the bill go, and as long as we're fixing things. And I don't know if Ms. McCormick could give us some ideas on what we might look at for that.
Because I don't think... Chair, could we vote on my amendment first and then take up...
I was trying to make one amendment.
We don't need to be that efficient.
We won't have to be that efficient. Let's vote on that amendment.
I think there's one more piece. Possible. One more piece of it, too. It's because this is property damage between 1,000 and 5,000, and this one is 5,000 or more, so you wouldn't want to have... You would just want to say more than 1,000, I think. You want me to explain?
Yes, Mrs. Berezovsky has another issue with the property damage, and she'll explain that.
Mr. Chair, possibly Senator Ortman might want to consider on 2.3 deleting but less than $5,000.
I would, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the recommendation.
Ms. Berezovsky will read back the Ortman amendment.
Mr. Chair, on line 2.2, after 7A, comma, insert great bodily harm as defined in section 609.02, subdivision 8, or death to a person other than the driver. On line 2.3, delete but less than $5,000. And delete section 3.
Mr. Chair, that would be my motion, and I would move it at this time. That would be my amendment, excuse me.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Ortman moves an amendment to do the reading that Ms. Berezovsky just had here. Does everyone understand it? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question. If we're deleting 3, should Section 4 and 5 become 3 and 4?
No.
No. Senator Olsen, I believe that's automatic.
Oh, thanks.
Renumbering is automatic. Everyone in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Do we have another? Do you want to do your other testifier first, or would you like to... your amendment.
Who else did we have on the list?
We didn't have anyone else, but
okay.
you talked about Mr.
Yeah,
McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members, I thought maybe Ms. McCormick could come up because, again, we drafted this bill last year, and we kept in the same dates, which would be highly unreasonable. So,
Senator Jumbauer, she is on deck there, ready to testify.
Mr. Chairman, I got a quick question.
Senator Day.
Is my new electric car, is that a motor vehicle?
It's got a motor in it? Runs by electricity?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, do you have it licensed to drive on the road?
I was just wondering what the definition of a motor vehicle is in our statute.
Ms. Berezovsky will look that up in the meantime.
Thank you.
But I believe that it's a licensed vehicle.
Yes.
Ms. Berezovsky will answer your question.
Mr. Chair, motor vehicle under 169.011 subdivision 42 means every vehicle which is self-propelled and every vehicle which is propelled by electric power obtained from overhead trolley wires. Mm-hmm. Motor vehicle does not include an electric personal assistive mobility device or a vehicle moved solely by human power.
Mr. Chairman, I think we, for those little three-wheeled scooters that buzz around here, we ought to put a license plate on them.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
It belongs to the Senate.
Well, then maybe not.
Okay, well, let's move on here. Senator Jungbauer, do you have some more testimony?
And Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure if we need testimony. We're kind of discussing here, Ms. McCormick and I. And because of issues with the court and other things, I think that I would move that we'd move the effective date out to August 1st, 2011. And then also under Section 5, line 2.28, we'd put it to October 15th, 2011 for the post board. This would not be simple. New statutes to implement, so we want to make sure that we have enough time to for courts, post board, driver's training, and things to get education and other issues up to speed.
Senator Jungbauer is moving an amendment to change the effective date in 2.25 to August 1st, 2011, and 2.28 to October 15th, 2011. Any discussion on that? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, that's 2.6 is staying the same as 209.
2.6 and 2.25 would also.
Mr. Chair, all of the August 1st 2009s would turn to August 1st 2011, and the 2.28, the October 15th 2009 would turn to October
15th 2011. Four places. 09. Change to 11.
So we have 1.2, 2.6, 2.25, 2.28. The other one in Section 3 disappeared. So.
All right.
Sure.
You want to read those off? Yeah. Ms. Berezovsky will read off the amendment.
Mr. Chair, the amendment is to delete 2009 and insert 2011 on 1.20, 2.6, 2.25, and 2.28.
Is everyone understanding the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. So,
Mr. Chair, I don't
Senator
know
Jungbauer.
If there's anyone else in the room that would like to testify in favor or against our amended bill before it goes to judiciary. But
is there anyone in the room that would like to testify for or against? Seeing none, Senator Jungbauer moves Senate File 26 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. We have three bills left. Senate File 15. Senator Rest, State Airports Fund Money Transfer Requirement. Senator Rest.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, I wonder if you have a request for this just to move to the finance, full finance. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy? I mean, is that where it would go next?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Or does it stay here?
Senator Murphy.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, this was referred to the finance, right? Right.
Senator Murphy.
Senator Carlson, what you need to do is tap the gavel and say that this is the budget portion of the committee meeting. That way we can re-refer this straight to the Finance Committee.
Okay. We are now convened as the Finance portion of the Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 15 requires the Commissioner of Finance to transfer $15 million from the General Fund to the State Airports Fund after the date of enactment by 14 days. What happened has happened in the past, actually, for the second time, and before that, regardless of the budget difficulties that the state found themselves in, it was a fund that was untouched because it's not general fund dollars. It is this fund is supported by three different sources, none of which are general fund. They're paid for by people involved in the aviation industry, including property taxes, et cetera. So in 2008, however, the airports fund was reduced by $15 million in the 2009 appropriation for DOT and the department and the area of aviation. And so by that repealer, the effect of the repealer is to restore the original appropriation in fiscal year 2009 instead of the current reduced appropriation of $5,298,000. We've had hearings on this issue. We know that it has been an issue that has caused a great deal of consternation among some members of this committee as well as others. And I would hope that you would act favorably on it, and we have people who can testify on this part of the bill, on this bill. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Rest, would you like to bring the testifiers forward? Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is John Krall, and I am a board member of the Minnesota Business Aircraft Association and representing them here today. I also manage a flight department for a Fortune 100 company based here in Minneapolis, and I'm also a pilot and an end user of the great airport system in Minnesota. First, I'd like to speak to you as a member of the board of the MBAA. Our membership currently has over 400 members, which includes pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, avionics technicians, schedules, dispatchers, aircraft salespeople, and other companies that provide services to Minnesota's aviation community. The 130-plus member companies represents people who actively use the system in the state of Minnesota. And they have a vested interest in maintaining the current system and improving our airports as new technologies become available. As an aviation director, I have the privilege of overseeing corporate aircraft based in three different states. My company uses these business tools to reach its 2,400 retail location, 5,000 independent customers, and multiple wholesale and distribution centers. I know firsthand how great the Minnesota airport system is because my company has many retail outlets and independent customers all over this state. I also understand as a user of the system, someone has to pay for it. What is hard to explain to our management team is the fact that it costs $300 to register our Citation 7 in Boise, Idaho, and $51,000 for the same aircraft in Minnesota. I explain, well, the money goes directly to the State Airport Fund to maintain the great system of airports, which we use in the state of Minnesota. Well, I used to be able to say that. The fact of the matter is that this fund has been taken twice in the last 5 years. Our company specifically paid in excess of $185,000 last year to fund the support of the airport system in Minnesota. It's essentially a user fee. Minnesota airport system is critical to our suppliers, our distribution services, and ultimately our customers. It is of utmost importance that this fund remains intact and is used for its intended purpose. Finally, as a pilot, I can tell you that aviation is built on trust. My passengers trust that our equipment matches the mission and that it is maintained to the highest standards every single day. They trust that I am trained well. I've done all my pre-flight planning. I know what I'm doing. I'm well rested, and I'm ready to take them to their destination and back home safely. I trust that the system I operate in is the best that it can be, from the air traffic controllers to the person changing the runway light bulbs. It is hard to fully explain with words what it's like to break out of the clouds on an instrument approach at night when it's snowing. But what I can tell you is that when you break out and you see a well-lit runway, you can tell the snow is removed beyond the runway lights, and the reflective stripe on the center of the runway gives you a depth perception so you can see where to level out and land. It's critical. It has to be done every single time. I trust that the airport manager is always there plowing the snow to the full width of the runway. We need the system to work, and we need to trust each other. The problem now is that through the actions of our government, the trust has been broken. We do not need more dialogue or study of the issue. We need to have the designated funds collected for the airport system returned. And we need to make sure that the state airport system does not fall victim to other budget shortfalls again. I understand how difficult a situation Minnesota is in, with a $5 billion, maybe $6 billion now, plus deficit. But you must understand that aviation is risk adverse. Not completing the simplest of tasks, like painting the centerline stripe, or removing the snow and making sure they have the snowblowers and equipment at each airport, filling in the frost cracks on the runway surface, or maintaining navigation aids can have catastrophic consequences for those of us who use the system. I hope that you understand my company and my colleagues at the Minnesota Business Aircraft Association are relying on you to restore their trust by returning and protecting the State Airports Fund. Thank you for this time to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Kroll. We have some more testifiers. Perhaps you could stage up, then don't forget to sign the log. And please identify yourself for the record. I believe it's Mr. O'Connor is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, good afternoon, members. My name is Ryan O'Connor. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I am our transportation analyst, and the Association of Minnesota Counties represents all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. And we came forward today as local governments to show that there's a side of the airport issue and the restoration of funding that goes beyond the business community and the importance to local governments and communities throughout our state to see funding in the regional airport system. AMC specifically adopted a policy platform in 2009 that supports, quote, the restoration of an ongoing full funding for the State Airports Fund to promote regional transportation, economic development, and homeland security. And that statement is pretty self-explanatory, but a few other thoughts on the issue before I turn it over to our next testifier. While local matches often are not county-based matches for these state airport funds, I think that's important to disclose up front, they're much more often city-based funds. The community benefits to counties as well can't be understated. And in a time when jobs can move anywhere throughout the state and they're more easily movable than before, and we continue to see job movement and job loss on the news at night, our smaller communities continue to thrive when they have functional and up-to-date regional airports that allow them to continue to transport their goods and services throughout the state to larger hubs where those companies otherwise could base themselves if the airports were not kept up. And so not only can jobs be created by ensuring capital improvements to our airports can continue into perpetuity into the future, but jobs can also be sustained in these smaller communities in greater Minnesota by ensuring that our airports are kept up to date. And I wanted to leave you with one example today. One of our commissioners in Roseau County in particular spent some time over at the War Road Regional Airport in some conversations with the airport manager. And during those conversations, he learned that there are three big companies in the area, one of which has a corporate headquarters in Roseau County, another has a plant in Warro County, and the third worked just outside of Roseau County, all three of which relied heavily on that airport. And the message stressed to our commissioner was that if there is no regional airport here that is kept up to the highest of standards, we simply do not believe we could continue to compete in northern Minnesota in the community that we are in, because this is what sets this community apart from having us move somewhere else, and we enjoy staying in the area that we are at, and we hope to be able to do so into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I do have a handout today. I want to first thank Senator Russ for authoring this bill. I can tell you that there is a very strong interest among our member city officials, over 830 of them, I believe we have. Not that all of them have airports, but we do represent most of the cities in Minnesota. There is a strong interest by city officials in restoring this fund. It is critical to keeping local airports maintained at the appropriate level and to upgrading technology, which, as you heard from Mr. Krall, is important to the safety of the folks who use those facilities. In addition to that, having an airport that is considered safe and well-maintained is critical to keeping communities and our state attractive to businesses. I can tell you that, as Mr. O'Connor mentioned, there is some local participation in maintaining airports, but they really depend on this state airports fund for matching funds and for getting projects moved ahead. The locals can't do it by themselves. Given the current budget pressures at the local level, specifically levy limits, unallotment of state aids, and declining property values, we feel that this fund is more important than ever. And also, just to go off of what Mr. Krall said, he mentioned the understanding of the state's fiscal condition, and we are also very well aware of that, but we think that it really emphasizes that it's no time to disinvest in facilities and other amenities that the business community needs at this time in order to do their work in Minnesota. So thank you, and I'd stand for any questions.
Questions? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, this would be a question for Mr. Krall. Pretty jumped out in your testimony that in Idaho it's only $300. Is that because it's not a home plate or a few based out of there? Would it be $300? And then the second part is, what is the condition of the runways and airports in that state?
Mr. Krall.
Thank you, Senator. The registration fee specifically is what we're speaking of here for that aircraft, for all aircraft in Boise, Idaho, is $300 per aircraft. And in Boise, they also have a fuel fee, I think it's 5 cents a gallon, that everyone pays, including the airliners that go to fund the remaining budget for their system of airports. They have, to the airports that we've used in that state, they have very well-maintained airports. But there's obviously different funding mechanisms, and the registration fee is one of the funding mechanisms.
Mr. Chairman, Senator
Olsen.
Question. There are three sources of funding for this fund: the registration fees, the air flight property tax, and the
fuel tax,
and the fuel tax, the aviation fuel tax, and the sources of that funding have been the topic of the working group on the state airports fund now for 2 years, and we continue to meet to try and find a more modernized way of getting revenue for that fund, because Minnesota, in an area like the registration fees, really stands out like a sore thumb, and it is a disincentive to owners to register their airplanes in this state. But that is not the topic here. But just to let you know that's where the funds come from, and we've been paying a lot of attention to that to see if there's a more equitable way of fair to all concerned to get revenues for that fund. But regardless, since 1945, when that fund was established, in 2003 was the first time that it was touched to solve our budget crisis then. The money was pledged to be paid back, and it didn't happen before they took it again in 2008. So we're trying to right that inequity, and keeping in mind the kinds of taxes and fees that are going into it. It's almost like asking the gas tax to directly fund our deficit, and we don't do that. It's statutorily dedicated, not constitutionally, but we think it should be respected.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rolson.
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification. Senator Rest, you mentioned, Mr. Krauss mentioned that it was 5 cents on the tax in Idaho. What is the level of fuel tax that Minnesota has in there? And you are saying that there is no general fund money that has been put that goes into that airport fund. It is all the fees that from the sources that you have said?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, Senator it's easier Rest. To answer the second question first, and that is no, there's no general fund money. We have a kind of a reverse system of the aviation fuel tax, which there are people here who are more expert in that than I to explain it, but it's kind of like the more you use, the less you pay.
That's correct.
So the more you use, the less you pay per gallon. So you can probably understand per gallon who pays the least, and that is our legacy airlines.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest, thank you for bringing this bill forward. As I have the South St. Paul Airport in my district, I'm very supportive of this. But one, a constituent asked, and I'd be curious for your comments on why is there a $15 million sitting there that was able to be taken in 08? Why wasn't that money spent? I mean, or at least spent down a little bit so you didn't have $15 million there to take?
Senator
Chairman,
for the
Senator governor to take. Sieben, it was due to be repaid by 2009, okay, last year, due to be repaid, but on their books, and we had a hearing on this in our little airways, railways, waterways committee, they never made the transfer. So the money never got to the Department of Aviation before they took it again. So what the Department of Finance needed to do was a book transfer then and say, here it is, and we take it back again. So it never really got there, although it should have been, but it was never reflected on their books.
Okay, thank you.
That's, and it may be more complicated than that, but that's how I understand it.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, does any of this portion or any portion of this fund go to support the MAC or that airport? Isn't that totally separate? This is just the regional airport system
just
outside of
130 municipal airports. St. Cloud, Duluth, Rochester, okay. You know, wherever.
Red Wing.
I'm sorry, 2 million. I'm just informed 2 million does go to the MAC, so that would include the feeder airports to the MAC.
Does everyone understand that how this worked, that Senator Rest explained that it was not paid back until it had to be paid back by statute and then was immediately taken again? And from what I understand, it does not have to be paid back again unless we exercise this statute.
That's correct. Senator Jungbauer had a provision earlier for the 2003 take that had brought about the repayment for 2008 that when they took it again in 2008, they did not include the Jungbauer amendment to repay it. So in a sense, this bill replaces that amendment that had been offered when it was taken the first time in 2003.
Correct, Senator Jungbauer?
There's not much more to say than that. The was done just that way, and we didn't get even notice that that $15 million was going to be grabbed again until several hours before the actual bill got drafted. So we didn't have time to react and make sure we've got that kind of a repayment provision within it. So that was the reason, to answer Senator Sieben's question, that was the reason the $15 million was sitting there, is there was never a chance of it being spent because it was never in there long enough to for anyone to encumber those funds.
Any further questions? Senator Olson. Yeah,
well, Mr. Chair, it probably is a question for the full finance committee, and maybe I should ask it there, but is there any money in the general fund left to pay it?
Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know.
It's rhetorical. I didn't expect you to answer.
But
Senator Rest.
But these funds also come into the State Airports Fund independent of the general fund itself, too. So they do get replenished, but this is $15 million that should not have been taken.
That's right. No, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you totally.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I want to be perfectly clear. These funds are paid by people that expect to get something back from the funds. Mm-hmm. So they're directly paid in with that expectation of whether it's field repair or navigational aids or other things. So this is the epitome of not having visibility, not letting people know what you're doing in terms of that tax. They're paid in the gas tax and the registration fees. And so it's very frustrating because what it means to every member here is every fund that's out there today has that chance of being taken, even though the citizens that pay that money into those specific funds expect it to be used with that specific outcome. So if we believe in any of that clarity and visibility in taxing and for our citizens, this is a great way to start showing that.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
In regard to this and the other bills as well, I just want you to know that for me, even though there are discussion because of our economic collapse, that these funds can be used throughout the cities that have these municipal airports for economic development, that first and foremost, we have to be concerned about the safety of those using the airports, the passengers, the pilots, and many, many of the projects are directed specifically toward increasing and assuring the traveling public and the pilots that our airports are safe. And to the extent that we do not replace these dollars, in my mind, we are putting safety second.
Senator Rest, might I ask, are these funds... are there projects that are ready to go for these funds?
Oh, yes. That have been ready.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Senator Moi.
And quicker than 90 days. I mean, we're not even talking about
thank you, Senator Rest.
The federal stimulus guideline.
Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, you know, while I am concerned about taking the money from the general fund to stay committed to what we took from the fund and put into the general fund, I am going to support this bill because I believe that it is important for us to be consistent, that if a specific fund was taxed from a specific group who understood going into the deal that it was going to a particular fund, that we should stay true to that intent. And so just as I will protect the healthcare access fund, which is similarly situated or established in the same way, I'm going to support this bill, knowing that it will create, not necessarily create a hole, but knowing that in the past it was taken the way that we're looking at other pots of funds to balance the budget. And so I will support this bill.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I wholeheartedly agree with Senator Moi. And having been on the airport funding task force as well, these are some of the issues that Minnesota actually has a higher cost to keep your aviation industry here. For the the Jostens and the Best Buys and the Target to keep their planes here, it costs more than most states in the country. So when we take that money away that these folks paid in with the expectation of good runways and good navigational aids, we lose businesses. It's not just about the economic development of fixing those runways and fixing those navigational aids. It's about chasing the Targets and the 3Ms and the Jostens out of Minnesota because we just took their money that they were okay with paying and that cost of doing business in Minnesota as long as they knew we were keeping their aviation facilities in good working and safe conditions.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Let's have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, then I would move that Senate File 15 be recommended to pass and refer to the full Finance Committee.
Senator Rest moves Senate File 15, State Airports Fund Money Transfer Requirement, to be recommended to pass and move to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. It is adopted. Senator Rest. You have we have two more bills here. I'm not sure if how quickly you can get to them.
I think I can do that very carefully, very quickly. And I think they're still appropriate to move up. I think one of them could go directly to the floor, but I'm happy to have them both go up to the Finance Committee, Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy.
Ms. Berezovsky said that they do have to go to Finance.
Senate File 482 deals with undoing the requirement that there be a local match when the federal stimulus money comes for airport projects. Currently, it's 5%, and what this does, because it's going to be happening with other funds too, but we want to clarify that for the federal stimulus money that may be coming, insofar as it can be used for airports, that it is that no local match, which is our requirement, not the Fed requirement, but our requirement, is mandated. I do have an author's amendment, Mr. Chairman, and that would be on lines 3-3 to insert, I'm sorry, it must be 3-4, to insert after the word any, the word eligible, and after the word project, insert elements.
What?
So,
what was the second word?
I'm going to read the sentence. Elements. So the sentence would read, no contribution is required from a political subdivision, municipality, or public corporation for any eligible project elements. And we had gotten a note from MnDOT that that the bill did not address the eligibility of the projects for those dollars. So and not all elements of a project would be eligible for the federal stimulus money. So we needed to be more precise. And so I agreed with them, and some of those items actually are also ineligible for state funds. So we wanted to make sure that we got the money correctly and then also made sure the bills, the policy issue is that there would be no local match required for the use of those federal stimulus dollars. So that's my motion to amend in that fashion.
Any discussion on the motion? Senator Rest moves author's amendment on line 3.4 to add in for any eligible project elements funded before June 30th. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's
Senator
a very straightforward
Rest.
Bill, benefits the aviation industry, and can be considered part of our overall plan to respond to the federal stimulus dollars insofar as we end up getting them.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Does anyone from the audience wish to testify for or against this bill? Any other questions from the committee? Senator Rest moves Senate File 482, to be recommended to the Committee of on Finance.
As amended.
Yes, 482 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chairman, then the next bill is Senate File 483, which involves an appropriation from a current appropriation from the State Airports Fund for this fiscal year, keeping it available for 5 years and making the enactment date the day after passage, so that the dollars that are currently in that fund don't have to wait in order to be spent on these airport projects that are, that hackneyed term now, shovel ready. They're ready now. And I would invite Ray Strege, who has been a very valuable asset for those of us who are passionate, or have become passionate, about aviation issues to give you some rationale on this proposal. And Gordon, both of them.
Mr. Strege.
Mr. Chair, members, I am Ray Strege from Shorty Elliott Hendrickson Incorporated. I am a registered professional engineer and also a registered lobbyist with the state of Minnesota. The 2008 legislation, when $15 million was transferred from the State Airports Fund to the General Fund, also had a repeal of the fiscal year 2009 Airport Development Assistance. So it went from $14.298 million to $0 for this fiscal year. We have no authorization to proceed with construction until July 1st of 2009. There are currently $11 million of state-funded with state funds in it that are ready to go in this spring. Delaying the construction until July of 1st of this year will reduce the available construction time by approximately a third. It eliminates the best time of the season for doing the construction as far as length of daylight hours, and results in more challenging construction conditions. This bill requires no use of general funds or borrowing for the construction. The general fund would benefit from this 2009 construction, and that these state funds are leveraging anywhere from $10 to $15 million worth of development, and using economic multiplier, a conservative factor of 2, we're looking at $20 to $30 million worth of economic development, upon which there would be individual corporate and state sales taxes paid, so we would look at some figure somewhere in the $1 million range of funds going into the State Airports Fund. There is a requirement that the State Airports Fund have a positive balance on the last day of each biennium. 2009 does not appear to be a problem. If we're trying to forecast out to 2011, there may or may not be a problem. If revenues lag forecasts, spending can be reduced to remain within the budget. So we would encourage the passage of this legislation, and thank you for your considering it.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that
Senator Rest.
483 be recommended to pass and refer to the full Finance Committee.
Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
Just a quick comment. Ms. Boyd just showed that this bill will cause an imbalance in the out years. Just so people on the committee realize that we're going to deal with that in our budget discussion this year. And I think that the committee has been, I think that we've heard Mr. Strege and Gordy, the message that you've been bringing to the legislature over the past few years. A lot of the people that use our airports, especially in greater Minnesota, don't have to be there. Senator Jungbauer was correct in the statement that he made earlier that, You know, these, you know, the companies may not leave, but they can easily move their aircraft bases into Wisconsin or Iowa. And you know, we're very fortunate to have these business owners that are here, and they're committed to the state of Minnesota, and they want to keep their aircraft here. And I do believe it's because we offer better services in some other states. But that's not going to be the case if we continue to rob their fund. So we just need to sharpen our pencils a little bit, pass this bill, and then in the budget bill, try to backfill some of the dollars that you guys have been losing over the years, and then make it pretty clear in our budget document that the money that you all get is yours and it's not used for, you know, to balance the state's books. So,
any other questions? Senator Ress moves Senate File 483 to be recommended to pass and forward to the Committee on Finance. Any questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Bill is passed.
All right, let's get out of here.
With no more business, that is the final, that's the end of the Transportation Committee and Finance meeting. Thank you.
You said it up. We lose the balance if we take this out. It's a special.